stretch out, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes, and tell me if you take my place. Under the cover of my skin,
episode number 111 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. Massive, massive show coming up. We're going to be talking about Zatopek. We're going to be talking about Steigen hashtag one, which is on this week. Big Moose rejoins us when he was away last week when Benny Saint was filling in. And yeah, it's going to be heaps of good stuff hopefully coming at you in this episode. Welcome to my co-host up in Canberra, Bradley Croker. How are you going?
I'm good, Brady. I'm coming down from the excitement of the Steigen 1 draft last night.
Oh, yeah, you did a great job of that. We'll talk about that later on because, yeah, I want to get your thoughts on how that all panned out and who we ended up with. And Big Moose, Julian Spence, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, mate. Caught the last show, actually.
Did you? What did you think of your replacement?
Oh, it was good to get some to hear from a good runner for once, that's for sure. Bit of expertise back on board.
Yeah, that's good every 3 or 4 months just to get someone who knows what they're talking about on the show.
Moose, it's good to have you back so you can stop sending us messages name-dropping all week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mate. I'm dropping actual names, not old blokes in Canberra that you used to run with. Names people care about.
True. That being said, I do look forward to hearing about your week in the US.
Yeah, plenty of fun. Not a lot of sleep, plenty of fun.
I might say that at the top as well that I'm not sure if we will have an interview this week because Moose has got a bit of a diary journal he's written here to talk about what he was doing over in the US of A. And Jordan Williams and Lyndon Hall are going to pop in as well at some stage to talk about themselves as the number one draft picks for Steigen this weekend. So, Moose, do you want to kick us off? What have you been doing over there?
Brady, before get to Moose's recap, I think we should congratulate you on your sub 30 as well before we get too deep into the show. Congratulations on joining the club.
Thank you, Bradley. Taking your record as well. Didn't want to mention that.
No. Well, the next percent adjusted time, what's that?
Oh, yeah. What is that?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
You're wearing a big-ass training shoe. What, you're wearing spikes, mate. What about the benefit in wearing spikes?
But if you listen to the 10K bonus show, it was in like a torrential downpour. the rain was coming in sideways. It just asked Benny Saint.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he did say that.
Well done, mate.
No, thanks, boys. Really appreciate that. Almost forgot about that for a second there. We've got so much other exciting stuff to cover. But Moose, you kick it off. I'll talk about that race coming up a bit later on. And, you tell us about the USA first up. Thanks, though, Brad. I'll have a beer to celebrate. You hear that? Inside Running Pale Ale, freshly cracked.
Yeah, I got a Tin City.
Okay, Carly loves the Tin Cities. She just drinks those. I never get a chance to get into those ones. Anyway.
Is that a nickname for Newcastle? Tin City?
Tin City. I'm not sure. All right, Moose. Third time.
All right.
Tell us about America.
America was really fun. We went over there, a few of the running company fellas headed over on a bit of a business trip, talk shoes, make some connections, do a bit of running. There's some elements were like that, but we went to Portland and met with, and went to Nike, and then we went to Seattle and met with Brooks. The other companies, they're on the East Coast, so New Balance, Saucony, around Boston area, funnily enough, for those listening interested. But so the first day we got there, long-ass trip, you know. How bad's that flight? I hate flying. Got there, Tryon Creek Trail. That's in Lake Oswego, so it's just out of Portland where we stayed with Scott, who has been on the podcast before. He's... he grew up there, and he had the connections. You remember the stories.
To butt in, but we had to pull those episodes down, remember?
We did, but we can probably put them back up again.
We probably can. If anyone's wondering why there's two episodes missing around the 60 somewhere, Yeah, we'll put those up. They were the ones with Scott to do with this trip. Yeah.
So Scott, he grew up in Oregon. He went to the University of Oregon. He was coached by Bill Dallinger, and then he worked at Nike for a long period of time. So he had a few connections, and we were staying at his parents' house in Lake Oswego outside of Portland. And so we ran on this trail when we first got there, the Tryon Creek Trail. And I mean, trails over there are so much different. They're really soft. There's big, like, redwood forests, and you just have this different feel about the trails, where underneath your foot it is soft and squishy rather than hard and rocky. So it was a fun run. The next morning, woke up, went to Portland, so drove into the city, and in there's a park called Forest Park. You've probably heard of it, but it's unbelievable running, and it's basically like 2 or 3K from the CBD. Amazing. It's got Leif Erikson Drive is a road that goes through it. It's an old sort of decommissioned road. It's softer than a normal road because it's got a lot of like foliage that's come down on it. And then there's trails that run through it. One in particular called the Wildwood Trail, which goes for like 42K, and it's just the best running you'll ever do. So we ran in there for an hour or so. And then we headed out to the Nike campus because we were meeting a man called Tinker Hatfield. So Tinker, if you like Netflix, there's an episode of the series called Abstract, and it talks about Tinker and his life as a designer and an innovator. So he was an architect, but he designed footwear. He's designed like motorbikes for... I think he was telling us a story about designing a motorbike for Gran Turismo on the game. But yeah, so we chatted with him. He designed the Air Max. He saved the Air Jordan brand basically and designed number 3 to 15. He's a legend. We had about an hour with Tinker, and some people, when you talk to them, you just know that they're on a different wavelength to what you are, and that his brain's probably thinking about 20 things ahead of what you are. And I always get I'm really impressed and I'm kind of overwhelmed by people that are creative, because I have zero creativity in me. So like artists, designers, musicians, the kind of people like painters, I just can't fathom what they can do. So it was really cool to meet Tinker, and yeah, that was a good day. Next day we went to the Nike campus again. I actually did a threshold run on the Hollister Trail. So Nike they basically purchased this land or forest next to the campus, and they put a trail through it called the Hollister Trail. And I think it goes for about maybe 2 miles or so. And I did a threshold around that, 20 minutes, and then went to the gym. So we got to use their facilities. The gym's pretty amazing. I think it used to be called the Lance Armstrong Building. I'm not sure what they call it now. it got taken down when the doping stuff came out, but I'm not sure what the building's called now. And that afternoon we met with a Nike old school guy called Nelson Farris. Nelson, I think, has been working since the mid-70s. He's the longest employee at Nike, and he's unofficially the president of Do the Right Thing and chief storyteller. But he's basically an HR guy, and he tries to keep the culture of Nike, kind of the roots of Nike, remembered. And his office is like a museum of running and basketball and golf, soccer, tennis. There's just... There was a shoe there that was handmade by Bill Bowman, one of the first shoes he'd made ever. And, it's just sitting right in front of us. There was Air Jordans, the very first ones. There's, like, personalized messages from nearly every major athlete. It was incredible to look at. So that was really cool. And you sort of got a bit of an insight into how Nike manages, like it's in 77,000 employees trying to keep the brand roots alive, whereas at the same time obviously employing people that have no real connection to Nike and don't really feel the brand values. they're there for a career. So kind of interesting discussion with him. Next day was a big day. So we met with Tony Bignall, who is the Vice President of Innovation. And he plays a big role in relationships with Kipchoge and his shoes and everything else like that. So he looks at what's happening, not at what shoes are coming out now or what shoes are coming out next season, but like 5 years down the track. And so it's, can't say too much about what we talked about because all that stuff is pretty locked down. But we did get a great insight into how much Nike played in the sub-2 marathon and how much the exercise physiologists were involved and how much analysis was done on the courses, the weather. And they basically have every single heartbeat of Kipchoge's that he's been when he's been running for something like 5 to 10 years. So they track everything, and yeah, they can basically predict what he'll run every time he goes out and runs. So that was cool to see. Saw some pretty amazing shoes. He also had a really great explanation as to Nike's as to the shoe doping argument and about like where they see the moral threshold of performance enhancing footwear. It was a real eye opener, and it made us understand a lot more about that as well. That afternoon, we went sort of more salesy and met with the running team. So the global director of running, we met him in the Nike DNA building, which is the Department of Nike Archives. So it's basically like Nike Museum. And there's a specific running section to this museum where you walk in. It's a circular room, and around it, it's just every single running shoe that Nike's ever made in a timeline order. And it also calls out like significant moments in footwear. So when they started to make Zoom airbags or put them in shoes, when they started to use Flyknit, when Luna came in, all these kind of things. So you can follow this. It's probably not that interesting for a non-shoe guy, but we were just in our element in there. And yeah, we talked and saw product for the Tokyo Olympics. That was incredible. There's going to be some real amazing shoes coming out for Tokyo, so keep your eye on that. Next day, we ran on the Michael Johnson track. So I got a bit of a sore calf, but we went out to the Michael Johnson track, which is, you know, the track at Nike campus where there's a forest in the middle. Mm. And so I was injured. I wanted to do a workout, but I had a sore calf, so I just jogged. And I said to Scott, I'm like, we got to go to the track. I want to see it. I want to run around it. At least just say I did. And when we got there was a workout going on. So Suguru Osako, the Japanese marathoner, was there. He was doing some straights and bends. And then we saw kind of the old Nike Oregon project were there with some, and they were doing a workout as well. Galen was there. So that was pretty cool. Just jogged around the outside lanes and watched a bit of a workout go down. After that, we went to the basketball. Went to there. Nike put us up in a box, the Blazers-Lakers game. So I saw LeBron play in person. They destroyed the Blazers, him and Anthony Davis. I don't know if you follow basketball, but shit, they'll win the championships this year for sure. A bit of a late night, that one. Had a few too many frothies and woke up real rough for Nike Cross Nationals, which is the high school cross-country championships over there, the national championships. They have two national champs. They have Foot Locker and they have the Nike one. So the Nike one was held at a golf course outside Portland, and it was pissing rain and freezing cold. And these kids were just balls to the wall, putting themselves in an absolute locker. Like we went out and watched the start, and you know the classic US cross country start lines where everyone like funnels in, just dead set sprint from the line and full gas for the entire 5K. They get to the finish line and just pass out over the line. Really cool to watch.
Hey, Moose, what's the difference between the two nationals? So do the kids compete at both of them, or can only compete at one?
They can compete at both. So Foot Locker was a week later. They call it the Foot Locker. So you can do both if you want. But I don't think a lot of kids do both. I think they just do one.
Doesn't that dilute a national championship, though, if you've got two a week apart?
Yeah, the idea behind Nike Cross Nationals is that you race as a team. So it's a teams event, and it's a really funny dynamic, but basically the schools are not allowed to compete in a national championship as a school, but you can do it as a club. And so each school creates its own club, and the clubs race in the Nike Cross Nationals, and that way you can have a national schools championship, basically. So you're running as a team, whereas Foot Locker is just all individuals.
So
if you want to run as part of your school team, which is unofficially your school team, you go to Nike Cross Nationals. If you're just pure individual, it's the Foot Locker Champs. I know Caitlin Tui, who won Nike Cross Nationals, she backed up and ran the US Open cross country and came sixth this weekend. So that's the kind of level that's going on there. The boys went out, ran on a trail out near Mount Hood, but I had a sore calf, so bailed on that. I just sat in the car, did work. It was pretty depressing. Next day.
You didn't tell us about that on Facebook.
Yeah, no, only tell us the good stuff. Chilling out with Gail and drinking free beers at basketball.
The trail was looked like one of the best trails I've ever seen too. That you just look down the trailhead and go, "Oh, that would be a good run." But sat in a car, did orders for the store. Woke up, calf was good. We drove down to Eugene from Hayward Field. We parked at Hayward Field, so the new Hayward Field. You know how they took down the old one, and they've got this enormous new stadium being built there for. Well, they're trying to get it ready for
2021.
No, they're trying to get it ready. Yeah, well, that's there, but they're trying to get it ready for the Pac-12 champs, which is in April, I think, next year. And there's a bit of a timeline where they need 3 weeks of summer or 3 weeks of no rain and certain temperature for the track to lay. And it's very hard to get that in Oregon, so it's a bit touch and go for that. We ran the town, so we basically ran out to Prees Trail. We did a loop over Prees Rock, which is where Prefontaine had his car accident and died. Then we ran down the other side into a trail called the Amazon Trail, which is where everyone does their workouts in Oregon or in Eugene. Dirt track, there's a few different loops you can do. Then we finished with a pizza at Tracktown Pizza, which is this kind of runner's bum type pizza joint where there's heaps of running memorabilia all over the wall. Then while we're in Eugene, we actually went to Bill Bauman's old lab, so where he used to make shoes, and it's tucked away in the city in Eugene. You wouldn't even know it's there. It's not marked, but we had a little tour through there. It was really cool to see, all the old photos of him making shoes are all taken down in that little lab. Then we actually went to Bill Dallinger's house. So Bill Dallinger, he coached Scott. He remembered Scott. He had a stroke, though. But he's still so strong in the mind, and he just has a few issues with his speech. But he was a three-time Olympian. He won bronze in Tokyo in 64. He basically coached Prefontaine, but he was the assistant coach to Bauman at the time. He took over at Oregon and was 25 years as the head coach. His house, again, another museum, just amazing photos. It's pretty epic. Then we went up to Brooks a couple of days later, and we had a run in Seattle. Pretty dark and dreary place up there. And then we met with a guy called Justin, who's the general manager of international markets, and did a bit of business chat about Brooks and how they fit into our stores and the direction they're heading in. and then flew back. Gold Rush trail run straight away out onto the course, marking it up. Got that, had a good day there, and then absolutely smashed. Had to get some sleep. Oh, God. Might have a break now.
Yeah.
Jealous, Moose.
Yeah, sounds like an amazing trip.
Yeah, it was overwhelming. So you're getting all these things thrown at you, and then you're not quite digesting them before the next big thing's thrown at you.
Mm.
And it's quite hard to actually, like, appreciate it at the time, because it's like, oh, there's Tinker Hatfield. Oh, there's Galen doing a workout. Oh, we just had a chat with John Capriotti in the Nike tent about, like, Gary Henry. And it's like, whoa, these are all really cool things that are going on. Yeah.
Moose, anyway. Is this probably the most fanboy you've ever been that week?
Yeah, you sound pretty impressed.
How could you not be?
Yeah, yeah. It's not having a crack at you. It's just wondering whether it, like, legitimately is the most excited you've sort of ever been in a running context. Like,
I'm not sure. Yeah. The answer is yes. I don't know. Yeah, taking the piss, but yeah.
No, I'm not. And did you bring much memorabilia home?
Nah. So I bought Bree a pair of red off-white Jaikuzu type shoes from the employee store. They'll hopefully never get worn and we make some money off them. Bought a pair of Stewie McSween special arm sleeves. But I did get my Nike, I've got a pair of original Nike Free 5.0s when they were first released. Scott put a box aside, and then he... Bree arranged a handover at some point, 4 years ago, and I got those signed by Toby Hatfield. We forgot to tell you about Toby, but Toby is Tinker's brother, and he designed the Nike Free and the Nike Presto, and so he signed the shoe for me, so I brought that back. That was pretty cool.
Sounds good.
I got heaps more questions, but I don't know whether we got time to go through them or not.
Go a couple, Brad. We just got to Skype these guys in about 10 minutes, so we might get them in a bit earlier than anticipated.
So first one is, you mentioned about Nike sort of justifying their shoes as to why it's sort of not cheating. Are you able to expand on that at all?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I don't think I'll get into too much trouble. But basically there's like a measurement of, I'm not sure whether I can or not.
Yeah, we can cut it out before it goes.
Okay, so basically there's like a measurement of how much force gets put into a shoe from your body as you're running, and then how much it gets returned from the foam or the shoe. And so all these people talking about the shoes enhancing your performance or like propelling you forward, there is not a single shoe on the market yet that returns more energy than you put into it. So like there's each shoe has a marker or an amount that it returns that they've sort of got an average from a bunch of runners, I believe. I think everyone's different. And so they'll measure like this shoe might return like 80% of the energy that gets put into it. This shoe is 70%, maybe a really soft training shoe might be 50%, and then a race like an X percent. I don't know exactly the numbers, I'm making them up, but might be closer towards the 100 mark. But nothing goes over the 100 mark. So there's nothing that the shoe is providing outside of what you're putting into it.
Yeah, whereas if you had a spring or something, you'd be getting, you know, 1.3, like 130% back or something.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's right. And so they're like, well, we're making shoes. They're not cheating. They're just giving more back than what your other than what your brand shoes do. So that's the explanation anyway.
And my last one, you're obviously chatting to a lot of Nike big dogs while you're over there, and recently Nike have had a fair bit of negative press in terms of obviously with Nike Oregon Project, and then the employees, you know, went on strike and that sort of thing. And you spoke about, you know, getting back to their roots. Do these people that have been around the organization for a long time feel like they've lost their way a little bit? Or that stuff was just never spoken about.
It was never spoken about.
I didn't think so. I just thought in case it was, but I thought it wouldn't have been. But that was a good question.
Because they were striking when you were over there, weren't they?
No, they striked the day after we left, I think.
Yeah.
We were in Seattle when they striked, thank God. No, that's not something we were really chatting about. And it was funny because we were like, everyone we sort of met or chatted with would have been like really good friends with Alberto as well. And but yeah, not something that I encouraged talking about.
No, you want to get invited back.
Yeah.
I actually just shut the fuck up the entire time and listened.
Just kept your head down.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay out of trouble. Yeah. Very good recap. Are you injured? Well, you touched on that calf a few times, but how's the body?
Oh, no, it's good. Yeah, no, I'm sipping on a diet ginger beer right now. Sorry, Sticks, because I am on fat camp. I'm getting fit again. Had a great run tonight, first run since October that I really felt good. So I'm motivated, doing push-ups every night, you know. Trying to get the rig back in shape.
Yeah, right. Bradley, tell us about your rig. What have you been doing?
Rig's not that great, actually. So I had a pretty light week. We recorded the podcast, I think, on Tuesday, and I said that the smoke had been pretty ordinary, so that was one reason I hadn't been running. My first attempt at a run was Friday, so I'd had 11 days off at that point. I went out with the aim of just running around Yerribee, even just a lap, so 4K, just to test things out. Because I thought, 11 days, tib post should be pretty good. Like normally these tendonitis-y things for me settle in a couple of days if I don't do anything. And got out of the car, had a bit of a stretch, got going, and I lasted like 700 meters. So from my first step, my tib post was sore. And I'm like, that's bizarre. It started to make me realize that maybe something was more structurally wrong than just overload. But the bigger issue on that day was because I hadn't done anything for 11 days, my whole back and hips were locked up. Like I couldn't have even made a lap around the lake. It was exactly the same feeling that I had after my calf, after Melbourne Half, when I had a couple of weeks off. So obviously time off is no good for me. So that was Friday. Saturday, I decided to just go to the gym and jump on the bike because I figured like maybe just doing some sort of exercise might loosen everything up a bit. So I jumped on the exercise bike for an hour and then felt pretty crook on Saturday and Sunday. Just was really like off my food, didn't feel like eating. So maybe I just had like a bit of a tummy bug. So I didn't do anything Sunday. And so that was my week of training. So very minimal. I know we're into this week. I did run today and I had some treatment today. So I have discovered what's going on because I ran today just to give my therapist some feedback. And he also found it a bit bizarre that after 11 days, my tib post was still sore. And he did an assessment of both of my ankles and he discovered that my talus bone had sort of moved in my bad leg. And it was like he showed me the example. And so on my good leg, his fingers were level. On my bad foot, they were like completely skewed. And he said, most cases with tib post, plantar fasciitis, that sort of stuff, often the talus bone is a cause. And when I think back to it, so in the lead up to my tib post pain, I had some pain on the top of my foot. And you know how that feeling where sometimes you've done your laces up a bit too tight?
Yeah.
I originally thought it was that. But I guess that was the point where things had actually moved in the ankle. And then the tib post pain started. And another thing that it all starts to add up, when I was at school teaching, I'd kick a footy. And that bit right in your ankle joint where you kick the footy, every time I kick the footy, I'm like, that's sore. So he did some mobilization on it today and taped it up. So I'm going to go back in a couple of days' time. But hopefully if that goes back into place, the tib post should just settle. It's just amazing how the body, like minor things, can just throw everything. So anyway, that's where I'm at.
This is real good news. Finding the cause.
Oh yeah, finding the cause for the tib post. So because it was I've never had that sort of issue really. Or if I have had it, a day off and it's good. So fingers crossed that I'm over the tib post pain in a few days.
Very good. I might whip through fingers my week, crossed.
Yep.
Monday, I had just a simple medical procedure done on Monday, so I actually had the full day off on Monday because I had to go into day surgery and went under and stuff. So Monday was a complete day off for me. Tuesday, I jogged 14K at 405K pace Felt great, felt poppy, felt fine, felt ready to do something a bit quicker. And on the Wednesday, I did a workout, which was a pickup run where I was doing 16K with the last 6K at half marathon effort. Spent probably the first 10K with a massive tailwind and felt amazing. It was going to roll in sub 4 minute Ks, and then picked the worst spot to, actually I picked an okay spot to start. I had a good tailwind there, and then the last 5K it was pretty hard. So there was no way I was hitting half marathon pace, which actually, Moose, I remember you writing in the program, do half marathon effort. So I just kept it effort-wise and was running like 320s, 325s into this massive wind, and just thought, do not bury yourself. You've got a race on Saturday night. So absolutely nothing impressive at all there, but got it done. Thursday, I did 12K in the morning, and then I just went out for an easy 20 minutes in the afternoon. I just had a massive day at work, and just wanted to clear the head more than anything. It wasn't scheduled, but I didn't think 20 minutes was going to hurt me. Friday morning, there was 10K in total, but I did 5 300 meter kind of strides at, kind of like 250 kind of K pace. Just kept the heavies on, just to tick the legs over before race day. Didn't feel fantastic, but was just in, heavy shoes, and I don't know, you feel a bit sluggish today before a race, I think. And then Saturday morning, I was in Bendigo, so just did a 20 minute shakeout run. Bumped into the beast, Jamie Cook, down at the Bendigo Creek. He was hooking around there after his workout. Nearly got taken out by a greyhound. This greyhound just came sprinting out of one of the ovals, like straight on the road, and it was absolutely fanging. Jeez, they're a fast dog. And then its owner whistled and just, went fanging back again. So that was quite interesting to see how quick that was going. And then Saturday night was the Zatopek 10K. So went down to Melbourne. I was I was pretty nervous for this one, actually, because it's just such a prestigious race, and I was just kind of snuck in there, and it was good nerves. Like, I was really excited to be in the race, but also at the same time, I was just hoping everything was going to go well, and the race would pan out the way I kind of planned, because I've watched Zatopek so many times where it hasn't panned out well for people, and you're kind of really exposed and very vulnerable when you start getting lapped and the wheels start falling off. So I was a bit concerned about that, but down there was awesome. Like, went down with my mate Crammers. He had his Christmas party the night before and was super hungover, so picked him up, and he wasn't real good company driving down there and back. But anyway, I told him he'd get to see an Australian record if he drove down with me. And atmosphere was cool. There was that many people around. It was just an awesome, kind of was like a European meet. Like, they had that kind of banked hill at the back there, and everyone was just laying on the grass and just watching the athletics. And I really enjoyed it. The race itself, we were a bit fast early. I kind of jumped in a pack with Max Stevens and Matthew Clark for the first couple of laps. I was probably sitting in probably 20th spot. There was 26 of us in the race with two pacemakers out the front, and it just felt a bit too quick. And on that bonus show with Benny the other day, Brad, when he was kind of saying, like, there's a line that you don't want to cross in the first half of a 10K, and I was definitely just overstepping that line a bit. Like, we were running, I think it was 252 for the first K, and then maybe 254, and then we went through 3K in 8:42, and I was just feeling like that was not going to be achievable. I wasn't going to be able to maintain that pace for the whole 10K, and just settled down. I kind of dropped from Max Stevens. Matty Clark had gone ahead at that stage, and kind of dropped back in the pack with Jacob Cox and Josh Maisie, and I think it was Liam Bolden from Gold Coast Run Co up there. Doug Hammerlock was in that same pack as well. And we just kind of settled and started running like 3 minute Ks, which when you've been running 252s, 253s, all of a sudden that feels kind of pretty chilled out. And we kind of just swapped the lead every time we'd get into the home straight. Whoever was leading would just go out into lane two, and Josh, myself, and Jacob Cox kind of just kept that role, and out the front, just the three of us swapping every third lap, and just keeping the pace ticking along at kind of 3 minute K pace. And then we got to 5K right on 14:42, so Just held 3 minute Ks from 3K to 5K. And at that stage, I just felt so much better, like almost had a smile on my face. I'm like, this is, I can come home in similar kind of time here. Like, I just felt way more in control and there was much more to give over the second half. And we just kept rolling through. We caught Max Stevens and he jumped in the pack for a while. And then Liam went to the front and he did a real good job keeping it honest through kind of like 6, 7K. I had a bit of a go at the front there for a while. And yeah, we just kept things ticking over until about a K to go where Liam kind of increased the pace again. And yeah, it dropped us all, actually. He was pretty solid when he went with a kind of K to go. And we held it together all right, the rest of us, but it was one of those races where there was no 62 or 63 second last lap. I was pretty cooked two or three laps out and just finished it off and come in on, what did I run, 29.34, so a 32 second PB. I was 20th overall. Josh Maisie was just behind me. Tim Vincent, we nearly caught him. He was just in front of me, and Liam, who I spoke about, he ended up running 29.24, so he closed very impressively. So amazing race, really happy with that PB. Like, I ran my previous PB in 2013, so yeah, it's been 6 years trying to lower that PB. It's not like I've been injured at all in those 6 years, and I reckon I've tried to break 30 minutes 10 times and split, you know, 5K in 15.05 pretty much every one of those times. So great that the monkey's off the back. Good to take down your PB, Croker. And that's, I don't need to run another 10K in my life now. I'm content. I can retire a happy man or die a happy man with that as my PB. So very happy.
So good. What's what do you think's changed over the last 3 or 4 months?
A lot of people ask me this question, actually. And it's I think it's a combination of things. So first up, I think like that iron infusion, like, well, all these four things happened in the space of 2 weeks. I got the iron infusion, Moose took over my training, Hudson was born. So I think I've been a lot less high strung. Like, I don't care as much about running anymore because you know what it's like, Brad, when you become a dad, there's nothing else in the world that kind of matters as much. So yeah, I've kind of relaxed a bit. And also because I'm getting like stuff all sleep, we've had to I'm skipping runs, which has reduced my mileage. So I'm only running like 130 at the moment compared to 160, 180, what I was before. So I think that's probably got a bit to do with it. And my weight's also up. Like, I'm pretty much at 59, 60 kilos. Whereas in the past I've been at 56, 57 and kind of had some hormone issues and stuff as well. So I think all those things put together are working well for me at the moment.
Nice one.
Do you think when so?
In the race, when did you know that you were going to have it? Like, when did you know it was all happening? It was all going well and you were going to really have a good one.
Yeah, so probably at 5K. When we went through 3K, I'm like, you feel like crap, but you're 18 seconds up. Like, you're going to run, 29.42. I'm like, you've got space to move here. And then when we just rolled 3 minute Ks, we then didn't lose any time, but we just felt better and better. So then when I got to 5K, I'm like, well, I'm still 18 seconds up. This is awesome. And I feel so much better. And then 6K, 7K, because we didn't pick it up again until probably 8K, it was the same thing. We were still, 18 seconds up. And then all of a sudden it was 20 seconds up. And then it was like, hang on, we can break maybe 29, 40 here if we kick this home a bit. And then the clock actually stopped when Stewie broke the Australian record. That stopped and it was pretty dark on the track. Like, they had kind of floodlights. So when you'd look down at your watch, which I only did once, and that was at the bell, I couldn't actually see the numbers. And Andy Buchanan had just lapped me before that, actually. And I was kind of thinking, oh, hang on, maybe we've, because he had an absolute blinder. I wasn't expecting him to run, 28.20 kind of thing. So I started to panic a bit and thought, oh, have we lost a bit of time over those last couple of Ks? And then when I got to 200 to go, the clock had just ticked over 29.00. And I was just still fanging it and still trying to get everything out. But I'm like, enjoy this, unless you fall over, which I didn't feel like I was going to. It was going to happen. So yeah, and the crowd support, the crowd wasn't on the track. And I saw that in the girls at APEC and I was like, oh, I wish they'd put them on like they do most years. And then probably with 2 or 3K to go, all of a sudden everyone was just in lane two or three. Someone told me, I don't know if this is accurate, that Justin Rinaldi just started moving bollards around and just told everyone to get on the track. And I remember Tim Crosby saying over the PA at one stage, like, just don't go, you know, further than lane three or four. And like in the past, Zatopek's always had people on the track for like that 100-meter bend, but they were on the track the whole way around. Like, it was insane, crazy. Like, and because we've got so many amazing listeners that were there as well, like, it felt like every 20 metres someone was yelling your name, and that happened for 25 laps. It was such an amazing experience. And we'll talk about all the Stewie stuff and stuff a bit later on, but that's just kind of my individual recap of it.
I think what was good for you in this race, especially with your mental state, was although it looks like you banked time early, your goal for the race was sub 30, which based on your current form was like quite a weak goal. So like really 100%. You're in 29:20 shape. So although it looks like you're banking time on a sub 30, which you have, you've got the fitness to hold it or back it up, or you knew that you could actually slow down and still, you know, break your goal, which I think, you know, it's important for a lot of people out there. I think sometimes they set their goals too high and then are chasing it the whole way.
Yep, spot on. And you get confidence from, like, yeah, knowing you're still under throughout the race. Because there were a couple of times in, like, when we did, like, probably, like, 6-7K, I was, like, sitting in the pack going, oh, this feels a bit too easy now. Like, are you pushing yourself enough? And I'm like, it's okay, we can kick it home later. Like, the main goal is to break 30 minutes. So, like, don't jeopardise that going with 10 laps to go. But we still, like, we went out first 3K at 29 dead pace. So that was still, that was why it probably felt a bit hot, because as you said, I was probably 29:20, 29:25 kind of pace or shape.
But if you're, if you were in 29:20 shape, which is sort of, you know, close to what you went out the first 3K, your mental state would be completely different, because it would feel a bit hot, but you'd also be going, well, I still need to hold this for another 7K. Whereas, you know, your goal was 30 minutes. So it's like, well, I've got 18 seconds up my sleeve here.
Got breathing space. All right, boys, let's thank some Patreon supporters, eh? Let's fire this through. Kick us off, Brad.
All right, my shout-out this week is to a quality athlete, Jacob Cox. So he's with Team Tempo in Adelaide, not AH Elite. So I think there's a bit of beef growing over there between the two squads. He's got PBs of 14:22. He ran 29:43 at Zatopek, which was off about 6 months of training. He's had a fair few injuries over the years. And he's also run 8:55 for 3K steeple and was third at the last Commonwealth Games trials. So thanks for your support, Jacob, and I'm sure those 5 and 10K PBs will continue to drop over the next few years.
Yeah, I was cooling down with him, and he said he's been stringing. He's strung together 6 months of training to run those two times. I thought, nah, it's a bit of talent right there. Give him 2 or 3 years, be flying. Moose, who you got?
Another quality runner, actually, Josh Maisie. He is a New Zealander living with another New Zealander, Dave Ridley, in Melbourne. Works at Nike, has run 14:16, 29:39. Was that from the weekend?
Yep.
He's 29. Yep, so big PB there. 68 minutes, 2:24 marathoner. He ran with a black armband at Zatopek in memory of Peter Snell. And he used to be coached by another Arthur Lydiard disciple, Barry McGee.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Told me that when we were warming up. Thanks for your support, Josh. I'm going to thank Brad Malloy. He comes from Geelong, Torquay way. Owns his own plastering business. So supposedly the best plaster in town. So if you need any plastering done, go see Brad down there. He ran 3 hours at the Noosa Marathon. Then he ran 3 hours and 6 minutes at the Great Ocean Road 44K. Moose, so what's that worth? How many minutes you take off down there? 10?
Take off?
Yeah, because it's 44K and hilly and windy.
Oh, I don't know, 20 minutes?
20 minutes. So he's ran 3:46 and then 2:47 at the Melbourne Marathon. He's also fresh. 20 minutes? Really? It's not worth 20. He's also fresh off a 16:52 parkrun PB down at Torquay. So thanks for your support, Brad. Rightio, boys, let's get into some running news. Big story of the week was Zatopek. I won't say much about this because I have watched bits and pieces of the stream, whereas you guys watched it all, I think. So tell me, Brad, give me your impressions, give me your recount, and then Moose, you go from there, and then I'll fill you in on what was happening on the ground.
Are we doing men's or women's?
Let's start with the women's. That was the first event.
Yeah, so it started off pretty pedestrian. Like, no one really wanted to get the pace going. So I think after maybe the first couple of kilometres, you knew that it was never going to be a super quick pace. But Emily Brikacek did most of the work. She pretty much led all the way until, maybe last 500, 600, something like that. And then Jen Gregson and Andrea Secafin went past. Jen and Andrea had a pretty good battle, actually, down the over the last sort of 200. Jen was in front, and then it looked like Andrea was going to actually come back and beat her, and Jen was able to kick away probably in the last 30. So she won in 32:47. Andrea was 32:48, and Emily was 32:57. Rose Davies is the third Australian, because Andrea's from Canada, was 33:25. Fair recap, Moose?
Yeah, this wasn't the most exciting race. Like, it was quite slow, really. These girls are all capable of running much faster than that, I think. And it sort of played into Gregson's hands a little bit. Like, we kind of knew she was the quickest. Andrea Secafin, though, she's a sub-15-minute world champ final 5K runner. She's class. I actually had her picked to win it. But Genevieve, too strong late, just like when she went, she went. And Brikacek, yeah, did the work, like you said. And but, I mean, it still wasn't – I mean, it's hard to compare to the men's event, but, like, you'd think all those girls could run at least a minute quicker than that.
Yeah, and I guess the difference was the men's race was set up for them chasing times, whereas there's no pacemaker at all in the women's.
Why is that? Were they not interested in running the time?
Well, I don't know.
The guys weren't official pacemakers, though. They were just entered into the race and they were doing a job. Like, even Tim Crosby over the PA was saying, like, you know, hopefully in a couple of laps we figure out who's racing and who's pacing. Like, it wasn't common knowledge. Well, of course it was. Everyone knew they were doing it. But, I'd say the women's, no one in the field wanted to sacrifice their race for pacing.
Yeah, and realistically, probably none of them thought that they were in 31:25 shape. So it was more about trying to just win the title and then pick up the time somewhere else between now and the Olympics.
Gregson did say, I think, in an interview as well, that like the 10K could be an option for her. Like, now she's got the title. And I thought she was steeple in 5K. I didn't even think of her for a 10K spot.
Yeah, so the interview after the race, she said that she normally would have done the steeple in the 5, but the timetable doesn't allow it for the Olympics, whereas the steeple and the 10 does work. So she's definitely going to chase the 10.
Well, if the points that she will get from winning a national championship and running a time that's pretty good will be large. So, like, she'll be ranked quite high, and I think the 10K can use a 5K time to help your rankings. And so she goes out, busts out a really fast 5, like does something like wins Oceania or something like that, then all of a sudden she's ranked so high that she'll get in through that without even having to run the time.
Yeah. All right, men's race, boys. We saw an Australian record, 27:23.80. Stuart McSween, tell us about how this panned out, because I wasn't watching much of it at all, only when they lapped me.
They were moving quicker than you, mate.
They were. It's like when they come past you, you think you're going all right, and then it's just like a train goes past. You get a bit of wind off them and stuff.
I've got a comment on that, because it made, like, watching this live stream, most of the race you saw two runners. That's it. You didn't even know that there was another, like, that there was other people in the race other than when they were getting lapped. And it made you realise the different levels of runners that there are. So it doesn't matter what running race you watch. The person that wins generally looks pretty good compared to everybody else. You go, they're running pretty well. You have, 20, how many people were in the race, Brady?
26, not including the pacers, 28 with them. Yeah.
You've got, like, you know, the top 30 runners in the country, and they all broke 30 minutes, which, you know, is quality running. But to see Pat and Stewie lapping 30-minute runners made the 30-minute runners, and no disrespect here, Brady, like mid-packers at park run.
Yeah.
Like, it's just amazing the different levels there. So they're obviously in the top 0.1%. And then, you know, you guys everybody else was still in like the top 0.5% of runners out there, but it's just such a difference between them. Anyway, yeah. that was my observation. But carry on, Moose.
I didn't even start yet.
Start, Moose.
Start.
It was quite an epic race to watch. We're on the edge of the seats, like watching it go on. So basically, Brett Robbo took the first. I'm not sure when he pulled out, but he looked pretty comfortable. And then Geordie Williams led the train, which had on it Harry Summers, Pat Tiernan, and Stuart McSween. So there was that pack that went through around about 4K. I think Harry Summers started to drop off around the time that that Geordie Williams pulled out as well. And from then on in, it was a two-man race, and it was Pat Tiernan with Stewie not quite behind him, but on his shoulder. So I think it was maybe to try to avoid getting tangled up in the legs a little bit, but Stewie, it gave the impression that he was always ready to go. Like, you just felt like he was chomping at the bit to get going. And it showed that he was, actually, really, because they went around, like, the pace, they pretty much nailed it. It was, like, 2:45 to 2:46 per K for nearly every single K. And then there was one that was a little quicker, 2:44. And then all of a sudden, shit got real at the end, and Stewie dropped the 2:35. And he went with 400 to go. So the bell went, Stewie went around. What did he run the last lap in?
I've heard 55.2. Don't know how accurate it is. I haven't put my own watch on it.
Yeah, I've heard between 55 and 57.
Yeah, well, that happened. And Pat obviously had just run 13 laps in front by himself, and he didn't have the change of gears. Not that I think that he probably could change gears like that anyway. I mean, Stewie's a 3:31 guy. The bloke can close hard. And he did close hard, and he got through. He ran 27:23, so broke the Australian record by a second. Huge PB, 27 seconds. Qualifier for Tokyo, 6th fastest time on Australian soil, fastest time in Australia for 21 years. So this is kind of, we knew it was coming. We didn't know who was going to do it, but we got it, and we got a battle for it as well. We saw two top 10K guys in Australia go at it. And this is what we want to see, isn't it? Like, this is what Zatopek should be.
Mm. Yep. And the live stream didn't give it credit for how good it was down there on the track. Like, I watched the live stream and was like, oh, it was way better than this when I was actually there. And I don't know if it's just because you're caught up and your endorphins are going and stuff, but the crowd were amazing. They got into it. They were so loud. Tim Crosby on the microphone, like his commentary, I personally thought it was so much better than the live stream commentary. Like, they were yelling splits, they were giving us updates on the Australian record. We'd just gone through to get two laps to go when he was coming into the home straight, and they were just counting it down, like, he's got 10 seconds, he's got 9 seconds, and the crowd just went nuts when he crossed the line. And you didn't hear any of that on the live stream. And I know the live stream, there was a lot of talk about points and roll down systems and stuff like that, whereas this was just like race commentary, where people are, what times, like, even he was talking about what pace our group was on, and, you know, what Benny Sane and Dave McNeil were doing. It was just, yeah, it was an amazing race. It was, yeah, I heard people talking about, everyone was buzzing afterwards, like, people are like, that was the greatest Zatopek ever. Sean Quilty, I heard from him, he was like, yeah, that was the greatest Zatopek he's ever seen, and he would have seen so many of them. Like, the Box Hill Athletes Club had just, like, this bar going. Like, everyone's just standing there with Stone and Woods and Furfies and Peronis. Like, it was just a fun, cool atmosphere. And I think that's a lot to do with the fans and the athletes rocking up, because the publicity leading into this race was piss poor, I thought. Like, they had all these amazing stories, and everyone knew this could possibly happen, and none of the big media sources or, like, Athletes Australia or Athletes Victoria brought it up. And they're so lucky that the athletes and the diehard athletes fans rocked up to witness it.
Yeah, well, we knew on the show a couple of weeks out that they were going to be paced through in 13:45. So there's a story in itself, because if it's getting paced for 13:45 through 5K, it's going to be a good race.
Hmm. Yep.
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 While we're on the topic of AA, one thing that really annoyed me was So on AA's website, there was actually a link to Zatopek live results. I clicked on it, and every single event came up with that, please come back later. Now, I know this happens. It happens sort of every year, but for some reason, all the results are on Athletics Victoria's website. Now, this is a national championship. Why doesn't AA have this stuff on their website? And if it's not going to be on their website, have a link to where it's going to be. Don't have live results, click on it, come back later. Because I went to bed that night not knowing, so I knew what Stewie had run. I didn't know whether Pat had run the Olympic qualifying time. I didn't know what you ran. Just before I turned the lights out, I got onto Strava and Andy Buchanan had uploaded his run and I could click in it and see who he'd been running with. So I had his result, had Hammerlock's result and a couple of others. I didn't know what you ran, Brady, like because there's just no results. And like it's poor.
Funny you say that, because I was talking to people for about 10 minutes after the race, and then I went and got my bag from the call room and pulled the phone out expecting a message from you boys and expecting a message from Carly and a couple of mates, and it was just nothing. And I'm like, oh, how come none of these pricks are like congratulating me on that run? I couldn't believe it. And then it wasn't until Carly called me and she's like, they stopped the clock on the live stream when Stewie crossed the line. We couldn't see any time. She's like, Athletics Australia website wasn't working. And I'm like, oh, you're right. It was exactly the same stuff, Brad. And people, obviously, Stewie's the main story for the night, but it's good to be able to share other people's performances as well.
Yeah.
Any other comments there, Moose?
No, good. I mean, great. Good.
Just want to, before we move on from Zatopek, I just want to give a shout out to Max and Cooper, who were at the event with their dad, Russell. These two young fellas come up and ask for a photo with me before the race. I nearly fell off the seat I was sitting on because I was like, what do you want a photo with me for? And Cooper had the little Inside Running podcast beanie on his head, listens every week. They were at the live show at Nike there, but were too scared to come up and say g'day to us guys. But we really appreciate those young fellas tuning in every week and, listening to the show. And they just love distance running. They were collecting people's bibs for the night. And, just so cool to see youngsters enjoying the sport.
The next round of frother.
Yeah, the legends. A Australia parkrun record got broken on the weekend. Riley Cox ran 14:18. At which parkrun was it, Bradley?
Pacananthi.
That's exactly right.
Pacananthi.
Yeah.
Full distance?
Yeah, it was Strava. We had a few people doing some research for us, a few investigators. Zane was sending us about 4,000 screenshots about how this may not have been full distance, but parkrun's parkrun, and it counts. It's officially the new Australian parkrun record. Liam Adams did have 14:22. Friend of the show, Tom DeCano, went out in the weekend as well and ran 14:31, and Dave Ridley ran 14:48. So some quick times getting around Australia for parkrun on the weekend.
Boys, what's your theory on if you've run a parkrun and your Strava is more than 100 metres short of a 5K, is it 5K?
I think you might have just turned early, just like those people in Ballarat the other week.
Missed the cone.
Turned early at the cone.
Missed the cone.
Parkrun's different. Parkrun can't be treated like that, I don't think.
Nah.
Parkrun's where you go and have a hit out, assess your fitness. It's not a place where you go run records and... It's a fun event. It's about participation. Like, it's cool that Riley ran so fast. That's awesome. But don't get tied up in that.
Yeah. I've always used it as a benchmark for training, going, all right, what sort of shape am I in? Doing roughly a 5K time trial on the same course.
They're all volunteers. They put the cones out. No one really gives a shit, to be honest. Yeah. It's cool. Like, but obviously, Riley's really fit and I've said this guy has the most talent out of anyone I know, like based on what he can do off such limited training.
Quick listener question here, guys, comes from Mark. Oh, Brad, you read this out. You can read this out every week. Why am I jumping in on you? It's an interesting question.
Here's one for you fellas. Although Stewie got the Australian record, was Pat's run actually more impressive considering he held that pace out the front for that long? I've got my little spiel down here, but I'd like to hear what you guys think.
I think it depends how you run.
I mean, Zatopek is an Australian championships. It's a championship race. And it's not about running times. It's about winning the national title, and that's what Stewie did, and he did it the way that best suited him. Like, no one gets upset when Mo Farah is sitting there winning Olympic gold medals, kicking at the end. This isn't the Olympics, but it's the national champs, and he ran fast. He won the race, broke the national record. He just did it all. Yeah, Paddy Tiernan, of course, we were a little bit sympathetic towards his result missing the qualifier, but you don't blame Stewie for that.
So Patrick Tiernan did come second in 27:31, and Jack Bruce was third in 28:15. Don't think we said that before. We got talking about all kinds of things. Dave McNeil, he was fourth in 28:16. Sam McEntee was next. Ben St. Lawrence, Andy Buchanan, Harry Summers, Jordan Guzben, Matthew Clark, some big names all through there. Brad, what are you going to say?
I think it's almost as equally impressive in terms of having to run that pace, like almost Australian record pace on your own for a big chunk of it. Although he got sort of blown away in that last lap and finished, what, eight seconds behind, I think it was almost equally as impressive. As I said to Geordie, I do feel a bit sorry for Pat, because the other way of looking at it is, although they've got different coaches, they've got the same managers, so in a way they're sort of teammates. And if Stewie can close the way that he did, then if he was to have, you know, led even a kilometre, then maybe that, you know, maybe you could have found that 3 seconds. Because you know what it's like. You sit behind somebody, you just get a little bit of a break. That's got to be worth a couple of seconds here and there. But on the flip side, I've no doubt that if Pat gets in a race where he can sit for 9K and finishes eighth, in a race where you know the winner's running 27 minutes, he'll get the qualifying time.
Yeah, and I think the question was, like, just is it impressive that Pat could run so quick by doing that much work? Not did he run a better race? Because we know, I think Mark, that's the point he was trying to make there. Moose on the loose, you got one, Moose. We got to run.
I reckon I did the shoe tip.
Oh yeah.
Talking about the shoes, that's pretty good knowledge, right?
What, getting everyone from Steigen #1 to go buy a pair of sprint spikes from the running company Ballarat between now and then? He'll deliver them the day.
Hold off till Tokyo comes. Oh, that's when the good stuff.
Good stuff's coming. Sure, he was in the good stuff, though, wasn't he?
He wasn't in the proper good stuff.
Okay. Yeah, right. I thought that was the good stuff. Moose on the loose is done. Steigen #1 news. It's this weekend. Brad, you did the draft last night. Who have we got on the Inside Running Podcast frother teams?
So our first pick was Whitney Sharp. She came in at #4. So she's the reigning Australian mile champion. She beat Jen Gregson last year at the Albie Thomas Mile. PBs of 9:21 for 3K and 4:15 for 1500. The thing I like about our team, there's a lot of team players that are willing to put the team ahead of themselves in her description. So every person that entered had to put a description about them as a runner. She said basically that she's willing to do whatever the team wants her to do. So, you know, that's they're the types of runners that we want, and I think it's a really good fit for the inside running ethos.
Real blue collar too.
Anything you want to add?
Yeah, real blue collar. Always runs in the club singlet. I like that. Not afraid to do some work early in races. Like, she nearly won that 1500 meter at Zatopek by putting the foot down with 500 to go. She's a good pickup, Brad. She was our #1, actually, wasn't she? Like, if we had #1, we would have taken her instead of Lyndon.
Exactly, yeah. And our #1 male pick was Louis McAfee, and we got him at #17, so that's a steal.
I feel like a thief, actually. I felt bad for the other teams.
This guy's got massive range. You know, he's run 3:46 for 1500, which he did about 6 weeks ago, and he's run 64 minutes for the half. He's coached by Jackson Elliott up there at our Gold Coast Run Co. A couple other impressive results. Second at this year's Noosa Bolt, only 1 second behind Geordie and in front of Dave McNeil. 10th at Zatopek on the weekend in 28:51 and has run 14 flat for 5K. We mentioned a while back that he was struggling with the ladies, but once he gets an inside running singlet on and tears up the track at Landy Field, the ladies will be flocking. So welcome to the team, Louis.
You boys didn't see this, but there was a one-time video, one view only, sent through on Instagram, and I somehow got into the message.
Yeah, I don't know I always check the Instagram way more than you. I missed this one.
There is a classic video of this bloke getting attacked by a bear, in, I think it was in Flagstaff. Oh, classic. I can't unsee it, and I actually can't view it again, unfortunately.
I tried to view it.
If anyone wants to send that through, we'll put it on our Instagram for everyone to know what sort of a character this Louis fella is.
He's very, very happy to be on our team as well. I had a chat to him on the start line as Zatopek and just said, like, probably should have been concentrating on the race, but I just said, hey, mate, we really want to get you on our team next week. And I knew that there was probably a little chance he'd still be there at 17, but my eyes lit up, Bradley, when you made that name green on our spreadsheet.
Yeah, and he's another guy as well that's really willing to put the team first, and excited for the weekend. Our third pick, Esther Kean. She came in at 24, pick 24, and she's our international marquee player. So she actually competed in the Nitro in Melbourne. She's a 206 800 metre runner and 422 1500 metre runner, and represented New Zealand at the World Youth Championships in 2009. So safe travels to Esther, and look forward to seeing you, Landy Field, on Saturday.
Stay off the durries, Esther.
Those rumours true? Hopefully not. Someone told us that. Bad
pick. Who sent you that, Moose?
Bad pickup, boy. She smokes. Hopefully
not. Our fourth pick, which was pick number 37, is Jordan McLennan. He comes out of the Gold Coast Run Co stable with Jacko Elliott up there. This guy's a real dark horse and has flown under the radar. He's in red hot form, having recently run PBs for both the 1500 metres of 350 and last week ran an 800 metre PB of 154. He's also spent some time over at college in the US, and he's super excited. He, as soon as we put his name up on Facebook, he added me, and I sent him a message saying, welcome aboard. And he goes, oh, super pumped. I'm here with Louis now. We're really willing to hurt for the team. And so he's going to be a good addition for us.
Yeah, he wrote us a message on Instagram as well. I'll read it out. Cheers for the selection, boys. I will absolutely bury myself for you fellas.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Yeah, these are the type of runners. Yeah. And, like, there's a lot of these runners in our team, which is good for the culture and good for the spirit.
Oh, yeah. Geordie Williams doesn't give two shits about steam packing. I'll give it that tip. All he cares about is winning $5,000.
The number 44 pick, which we got, was Nathan Pearce. He trains with all of the big dogs in Melbourne and played a big part in Sinead Diver's New York prep. I saw on Strava that he was pacing her for a lot of the big sessions. And interestingly, you, Brady and Nathan finished pretty much the same time in that 3K the other week. So based on that, I reckon he's in around 14.09 5K shape and 29.30 10K. But his current PBs are 8.21 for the 3K, 3.54 for the 15, and 1.56 for the 800. So welcome aboard, Nathan, and I reckon you'll look real good in a inside running singlet.
So that's our third pick male. That's good. Tell us about maybe our fourth pick male, and then we'll go with our other two females. Keep them all in order. You're doing
all right.
Yeah. So who's our final male?
Yes, so Pete Kerr is our final male, and he was draft pick number 64. Pete's the enforcer of our team. He's also a past guest of the show. A couple other interesting stats. He won the Noosa Triathlon, so he knows how to perform on the big stage. Pushed Moose all the way at the Great Ocean Road Marathon a couple of years ago, and he's a sub-15-minute 5K runner, 2:26 marathoner. And he's a cop, isn't he, Moose?
He is, yeah, so he is.
Might be bringing a bit of pepper spray along.
He's a soft cop.
He'll have a roll on the evening. He was a good pickup at 64. And our other two females, Brad?
Yeah, another team man, I reckon, Pete.
Mm.
Oh, he's keen. He's got a few little local rivalries to deal with as well. So it's more than just performing for us. He wants to be still. He always thinks of himself as the best in Geelong, even though he never has been. So, but he's still trying to sort of earn that title. It's coming up here.
Pick number 57, this was our third female, Audrey Hall. So Audrey's represented Australia at multiple World Mountain Running Championships. She also competed at this year's Oceania Champs in Townsville and has a 1500 metre PB of 4:43.
Bit of banter too on the Instagram lately, Audrey. Bit of a firecracker.
Need a bit of that. Need a bit of white wine fever kicking in for Audrey.
Yeah, I think she's going to release the fury on Saturday. Good. And our final female pick at pick number 77, which I reckon this was a steal at 77, is Steph Austin. The longer the better for Steph. She's won just about all the big trail races around the country, including actually the last 2 6-foot track marathons. She finished second at in New Zealand at the Tarawera trail run, and also won this year's Canberra Marathon in 2:43. And over the shorter distances, she's run 17 minutes flat for 5K. So she's a great pick at number 77. And do you coach her, Moose?
Yes, I do. Yep. Tricky is getting her not to do too much.
Yeah, I said that on our Facebook page, to go easy on the mileage this week.
Yeah, I'll cut her right back.
A couple of 300s or something.
Not sure she'll handle that too well, but it's for the team, Steph.
Oh, Steph, yeah. Patreon supporter as well. She'll do anything for the Inside Running Podcast team. So it's just a team, isn't it? All those names.
Yeah,
that'll just slide awesome. In. So we've got a team meeting coming up next couple of nights. That would be good. Discuss some team strategy. Oh, I'm so excited. Like, we'll tune it into the draft last night, which actually went down. It didn't end up working. Mm. Like, it was just fun. Brad was on the phone. We were working on this spreadsheet and you were changing colours and we're trying to. We had 2 minutes to think every time about who to pick. My computer was like going so slow. I wasn't much help at all. But I'm so excited for Saturday night.
Me too.
You sound it. Going to Skype in Lyndon Hall, talk about some Steigen at one. She was the, what'd you say, Brad? Number three
third draft pick.
Welcome to the show, Lyndon Hall.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. A bit of short notice, fresh off getting drafted at number three, but the first female in the Steigen hashtag number one draft last night.
Yeah, a little bit bitter to go after Isaac Hockey, actually.
Yeah.
That's rough, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
He hasn't done anything in like 10 years.
Yeah, I know. Like, does he even run anymore?
No, I haven't seen him running.
We were very shocked with that selection as well. How you feeling, Lyndon? What's the, how you feeling? How's the current form?
Sort of been slowly, you know, rebuilding after World Champs. Saturday will probably be the first time we chuck the spikes on since World Champs, that's for sure. It might be a little bit of a shock to the system, but I'm pretty excited to get back out there. I've been pretty excited for the event for a long time. I think I told a bunch of people about it overseas and they're all pretty keen to tune in from all parts of the world and basically see how much we suffer, I think.
Yeah,
Lyndon, Brad here, just a question, because obviously there's big prize money on for the individual win. Where will your priorities be on the night? To take that $5,000 or score maximum points throughout each event?
Oh, is it greedy if I say I want to do both?
No, not at all.
That's a good payday.
Exactly. I mean, our team's looking pretty good on paper, so it'd be pretty silly not to talk tactics with those guys. I'm sure our team coach will be having some plenty of thinking time this week. Hopefully have a little bit of team meeting beforehand and probably, you know, try and have a crack at doing both the best way I can. Hopefully we can. The 3K is obviously probably going to be one of my strengths, so that's where most points are up for grabs, so I guess that's my angle of hopefully being able to, you know, cover both stones.
What are your thoughts on the team? Morton, happy they picked you up? Ben Toomey as head coach?
Yeah, can't complain at all. It's a great looking team. Got, you know, a few people I know, a few people I don't. So be cool to get to meet some of the younger girls that got picked up in our team. Hopefully they can have a good run on the weekend. But a few people, you know, Lockie Hurd from my own training squad will definitely be throwing some banter on warm-ups this week at training, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's quite a unique event where, you know, you're racing a three and then having roughly 10 minutes rest, a mile, 10 minutes rest, an 800, 10 minutes rest, and a 400. Have you done anything in training specifically to prepare for this type of event?
We did a little bit of a session last week where we played a little bit with something similar, but unfortunately we didn't get the 10 minutes recovery. that's really disappointing. But the problem is my coach is coaching one of the opposing teams, so I don't know if he's going to try and sabotage me this week at training or whether, you know, he's going to set me up for the win. I'm probably going to have to offer some kind of cut of the $5,000 prize money, you know, if we go after that. So it's all going to get very nasty at training this week, I think.
Yeah, interesting. And do you look out for any other competitors, like any other females that got drafted that you're secretly keeping an eye on?
Oh, I think, you know, a bunch of the girls have already started racing and, you know, around the 15 at Zatopek on the weekend. So definitely going to have the edge on me from, you know, sharpened up a little bit in a race setting. You know, obviously Bernie Williams from my squad, as well as Sarah and Whitney have both, you know, had a couple races under their belt. So
yeah,
definitely
Whitney's
have to keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
I'd back Whitney.
Whitney is going very well.
Oh, a little bit of bias there, your own team, I see.
Moose, got any questions for Lyndon before we let her go? World Championship, what were your teammates over there?
Yeah, yep. We were in Italy together. You remember me?
Of course, how could I forget? All the heat tent times, oh, how fun.
He was the guy that didn't stay with the team.
There's always one.
Question, thoughts on your kit?
Well, I think, you know, black always looks very slick. And, of course, everyone's shoes will match their outfits. You know, not going to have any clashing. I think, you know, some of the bright uniforms, that might be an issue for some people, won't look as good on Instagram later. So, you know, that's a real advantage. Definitely.
Yeah, no, you and us, we have the best kits, Morton and Inside Running.
Yeah, I've already got the palm trees on
the... Yeah, palm tree looks good.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Okay. No, I don't like it.
But, yeah, it wouldn't match my shoes, so...
Has Ben Toomey offered to pay for it? Oh, you're sponsored. You don't need your shoes paid for. Just, has he offered anything like under the table, any different incentives or anything?
Oh, you guys offering your team some perks like that after race game.
One of us owns a shoe store, which is might come in handy.
Wow. Is that legal?
I haven't been told it's not. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Interesting.
Awesome, Lyndon. We might leave it there. Thanks for the time, and we'll see you down in Geelong on Saturday for the Steigen hashtag number one.
Too easy. Look forward to seeing you down there. Definitely will be less friendly.
Yeah.
Great start.
That's it. Thanks, Lyndon. See you later,
guys.
Bye. All right, next guest we're getting in is Jordan Williams. Give me 2 seconds, boys, and we'll get Jordan in as well.
Hello.
Jordan Williams, welcome to the Inside Running Podcast.
How you going?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Hey, Jordy.
Hey, mate. What's up?
Not much. Just we're looking at these Steigen hashtag one teams, and you were the number one draft pick. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a big honour. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
Bit of weight on the shoulders?
Not too much. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy with how I'm going, so...
How have you pulled up from your 4.7k on Saturday night?
It was a bit sore. It was a bit harder than I thought, but glad I could help out for a little bit. Anyway, I did a few strides tonight, which made me feel a bit better, a bit faster especially, so that's good.
That's good. Hey, what are your thoughts of Saturday night? What are you thinking, playing the team game or going for the individual win?
Wouldn't you like to know? I don't think it's fair to speak to... opposition coach now, is it?
I'm not the coach. Moose is the coach. You can tell me whatever you want.
One thing I take from this is that Geordie's not quite as confident as Lyndon, because she said she was going to do both. Clean up for the team and individually.
Yeah, I'm not too sure yet. I had lunch with Tim O'Shaughnessy today, but we didn't talk too much about it. It was actually his birthday, so happy birthday, Tim. But I haven't talked about it too much yet. I'm not really sure. As of yet, but I'll obviously it's a pretty decent little carrot, you know, in front of me. So be looking
team
at
sport, team sport, mate.
Hey, Geordie, assuming you get through to the 400, who do you see as being your major competition in that particular event?
I was surprised he was picked up so late, but I think Will Austin Cray is going to be pretty handy in the 400. He probably had the fastest PB, almost, I'd say. But I think he's going to be pretty competitive. A guy like Kang Yoak, if he gets through, he'll be pretty good. But yeah, that's probably going to be the toughest part, getting through. I think that's going to challenge a few people. And 10 minutes actually isn't very much time between events, so I think that'll definitely come into play.
And do you think this... Oh, sorry, you go, Moose.
You got a pair of sprint spikes handy for that 400?
Nah, who has sprint spikes?
I got some.
Well,
if you
want to come and sell me a pair.
Geordie, with the 3K, do you think it'll be quite slow early and it'll just come down to a massive kick over the last 400, or do you reckon that there'll be some people that will like make it pretty honest early?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be pretty quick, because there's a few crafty coaches out there, I'm sure, like Moose, that'll know there's plenty of points up for grabs there, so may as well make it hard.
A few 8-minute 3Kers in there, I reckon.
Yeah, hopefully not that quick, but you got to do it, don't you?
Weather looks like it'll be good.
Yeah, I checked the forecast, looks all right, so yeah.
Geordie, will you do something different in training this week, or have you, that will prepare you for this? Some kind of short reps off long recoveries, but nearly flat out?
Not really. I usually on a Monday night, I do some like bit of technical drills and strides, and I did one 200. So I think that'll do me.
I don't think Geordie needs to work on his kick too much.
Yeah.
It's pretty solid. Still bitter about that 500 took off me Geordie in 2011 at Noosa.
Oh, you still hang on to it, mate.
Fucking hell.
I am.
You know how many times?
Can't feed my family.
I guess some people never forget, do they?
Oh, this is sad, Brad.
Last time, I haven't mentioned it to him in person.
We got him on here to try to psych him out, Brad, and you bring that up. It's not working.
Yeah, what is it with you guys? Last time Moose just let me know about the time we raced at Eckerd in 1 year.
Yeah, you beat me. I didn't talk too much. Anyway, I think I've got this idea. Oh, I shouldn't tell you, actually. It's going to be interesting on the night, because it's a team sport, and there's four others on the team that are all working together. And if you like look at a basketball game or something, there's plenty of tactics or plays that can get drawn up. Now, there's no reason you can't do that in a track race as well. So make sure you shine the elbows.
Oh, yeah? No worries.
A couple of big bodies on our team. A couple of big runs.
That's all right. I've got to catch me first.
Very good. You've got a pretty decent team in there. Jared Clifford's in there, Katie Gamble, Olivia Richardson, Tammy Quinn. The coach has done well to pick a team like that.
Yeah, Tim's a pretty good coach. I didn't expect much less.
Yeah.
Quick technical question. Do one of the teammates have to be leashed to Clifford?
No, I don't think so. I think he's running without the guide.
Oh, no guide.
No guide.
Okay.
I think less than 5K is all good.
Mate, okay. Clifford's. I think Clifford's going to be very helpful.
Mm.
Yeah, for the points for sure.
Yeah, he's pretty fit.
Pretty quick. Rightio, boys, any more questions for Geordie while we're here? Oh, Geordie, you obviously paced that you paced the first bit of, Stewie's record on the weekend. Tell us a bit about that. It must be pretty rewarding doing a job like that and then seeing the result come off.
Yeah, it was really good to see Stewie, kick on and get that record. It was pretty good last lap. I actually didn't think, I was standing at the finish line with Brett. We're sort of like, we weren't sure he could get it. I really thought like, oh, he's going to have to run on 55 seconds. That's pretty good going. And, off a decent pace, it wouldn't have been easy. But, yeah, it just shows the kind of athlete he is and how good a shape he is and he's in currently. But I think a lot of it also got to go to Pat. A lot of credit goes to Pat, I reckon, because I don't think we did nearly as much for Stewie as Pat did. So, yeah, it was pretty good pretty good team effort. Good three pacemakers.
Yeah, well said.
Geordie, how was Pat after it? Because I have no doubt that if somebody's helping him between 4.6 and 9.6K, that he gets the Olympic qualifying time without a doubt. So was he a bit bitter, or what was his mindset afterwards?
I didn't speak to him too much, but Pat's like a good guy, so I couldn't imagine him being too upset about anything or letting anyone know about it for that matter. So, I mean, it would have been really good for him to get the Olympic qualifier, and that's probably the only real downer of the night. You know, everyone, it seemed like a great night. Everyone ran really well. Everyone was really happy. So that would have been the cherry, so to speak. But I don't see him not getting picked for the team, whether it be on roll down or, you know, because he's already in the 5K. They just add him in.
Yeah.
Good work. Thanks for your time, mate. And we'll see you down there on Saturday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening.
No worries, fellas. It'll be good to give you a pasting on Saturday.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. See you, Jordy.
See you, Jordy.
You can just hang up that now, and we'll keep rolling here. Thank you. All right. What else is coming up? There's also a 10K down the Steigen. This field is also hot. Brett Robertson's in the field. Riley Cox, Thomas DeCano, Matthew Hudson, Nick Earl, Daniel Wallace, James Coleman, Ben Kelly. All these guys have broken 30 minutes. Josh Maisie, Guy Waters, Michael Marantelli, Frankie Conway. It is super, super deep. I could start reading more names.
Don't read more names.
The slowest person is 31.10, they tell me. So if you want to get down there, watch the hashtag one. You could also see a good 10K on as well. Albie Thomas miles on at Sydney. So listeners, if you're in Sydney or Melbourne or Geelong, get down and support these events, because as I said before, they are so much better in person than on the live streams. And pretty special to watch some of these athletes get around. We done, boys?
And if you're not going to the event, and you, now that you know what who our team is, get behind them, send them a little message on Facebook or Instagram, or give them a bit of a rev up.
This is our biggest strength. We got way more fans of this podcast than any of those other teams have. So get around them for sure. Hit them up. Get on board. Get on board the frothers. They're up and about. I was wondering when we're tagging like Esther in like welcome to the frothers stuff. I'm like, does she have any clue what we're actually talking about here? This could be could be a bit awkward if she's not sure what's going on here. All right, boys, we're done. Moose, what's going up in your life?
I'm not on the routine now. It's all back together. Might come down to Steigen on Saturday night.
What do you mean might? You're head coach. You will be there.
Yeah, but you know, work. Hey, I'm thinking we should get a good long run going on Sunday morning.
Yeah, there's that many people keen.
That's right, a lot of people in town.
Tom DeCano's keen. I was talking to him today about it. He was talking about pace for the they want to go out at 29:30 pace, and he was checking if I was keen for that. Will Austin Cray, he's keen as mustard. He's pretty annoyed at you, Brad, that you didn't pick him, but he's still keen for a long run. A few people keen as mustard. Nick Earl.
All right. Don't invite him.
Brad, what are you doing between now and then?
I'm pretty much on holidays. School's finished up here. Actually going for a run tomorrow with Jess Pascoe, former guest of the show. She's back from the US for a few weeks, so she's never run at Mulligan's before, so I'm going to give her the tour.
Oh, she didn't start Zatopek.
No, I think she's. I think after NCAA Cross, they decided to shut it down for a couple of weeks.
All right, listeners, you may hear a bit of an interview with someone here. We're not sure yet, or this might be the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. See you later.
See ya.